Welcome to your Found Family podcast, where we don't just have a heart-to-heart, we connect soul to soul. I'm your host, Lizzie, a certified coaching practitioner who found family outside of blood family. In our Found Family, you are accepted and assured that you are not alone. Subscribe and tune in for educational and empowering soul chats with women from all over the world, talking about well-being, personal growth and development, and mental and emotional health. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Found Family. I'm so excited. I have another special guest with me today, Dr. Gazelle, and we are going to be talking about the imposter syndrome, why it's so damaging to our self-esteem, and three ways to overcome it. An assistant professor at Harvard Medical School, certified mindfulness teacher, and survivor of childhood abuse, Dr. Gazelle knows resilience inside and out. I would love to help the Found Family podcast listeners learn more about how to build theirs. As one of the leading physician coaches in the country, she has coached over 500 physicians and has been featured on such diverse media as Bloomberg Businessweek, Medical Economics, the Physician Leadership Journal, the New England Journal of Medicine, CNN, and ABC News. Her book, Everyday Resilience, A Practical Guide to Build Inner Strength and Weather Life's Challenges, came out in August 2020. Dr. Gazelle, thank you so much for being here. It's such an honor and such a pleasure.
Oh, it's really a pleasure, Elizabeth.
Absolutely. And so this topic is something that is so important to talk about, and I'm really happy that we're going to be addressing it on Found Family today. And for those who might be wondering what imposter syndrome is, I think that's a really great question for us to start is, what is imposter syndrome? Yeah.
I suspect a lot of your listeners know what it is, but for anyone who doesn't, it's that belief that we have that we're not the real deal. We're not as smart as, we're not as good as, we're not as perfect as, and you can kind of fill in the blank, you know, as a colleague, as other parents, as, you know, an adult child, whatever it is, this belief that we're kind of a phony. And we, as part of that belief, there's a sense that it's only a matter of time until we are found out. And when we are found out to be the fake, phony, fraud, we're going to be exposed in some horrible way. We're going to be shamed. We're going to be the laughing stock of our community or of our institution. So the weightiness of it is really massive, because we're walking around just thinking that we know so little, and that, let's say, our peers, similarly situated people, know so much more than we do. Yeah. And it just leaves us feeling, you know, so low about ourselves and unable to see our strengths. But that's the definition of it in a nutshell. And again, as people are listening now, I think so many of us walk around feeling like an imposter in some area of our life. So that's why I'm imagining that people have a sense of what this is.
Yeah. And I appreciate you sharing the definition. I will say that I actually fell in the category of not knowing what the term was called, but having the feelings of imposter syndrome. And so to have that awareness about what it's actually called gave me a sense of comfort in a way, because it helped me to realize what I could learn more about it and how I could help myself. So I think that when it comes to that imposter syndrome, especially like as a fellow coach, you know, when I was first starting out, even though I had my certificate, there were always moments where I thought, am I the real deal? Can I do this? Am I trying to be someone that, you know, I might not be yet? You know, I know that I feel like a coach and I feel ready, but there were times even before becoming a coach where I really felt that sense of, I feel like I'm being a little phony here. But it's such a interesting, way to, like, when we think about it, you say it out loud and you're like, why would I think that? But when you're in the middle of it, it can hit you in so many different ways.
That's right. And also what you're saying, Elizabeth, it's validating when we have a name for something, isn't it?
Yeah.
It helps us make sense of our own reality. So I get that in what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I mentioned a little bit about how I didn't, you know, I knew how I was feeling, but didn't quite know what the name of it was. We touched upon this a little bit, but can you also elaborate with our listeners what it feels like so that they can also use this as a self-awareness for themselves?
Well, when we're feeling like an imposter, we feel pretty crappy about ourselves, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
We are so focused on our deficits and the idea that somebody else is so much better than us in whatever category we've latched onto, that I think it takes us into a really dark place. It takes us out of a sense of competence, a sense of accomplishment, a sense of, wow, I really do have so much to offer in whatever role I'm in. And we all deserve to feel that. And yet when we get hooked by our mind and this idea that we're an imposter, it's the opposite of that. It takes us into a downward spiral of thought loops, frankly, that can keep us depressed and anxious and uncertain, ruminating about our experiences, and not a good place at all. So, you know, some examples, sometimes we feel like an imposter in our workplace, mm-hmm. and everybody else is so good at this task, or everybody else gets kind of what it is that we're supposed to be doing, if it's a project that we're working on, but somehow I don't. So it's this very either or kind of thinking. Mm. You either are good at it or you're a failure. It's kind of emblematic of what we think about as a fixed mindset. We can feel it as a parent. You know, I'm not really good as a mom. I'm kind of a fake mom almost. It's kind of a funny thing when you say it that way, but I've talked to so many moms, you know, very good moms, you know, moms who deserve to feel good, but they may feel like an imposter, you know, mm-hmm. that somehow all these other moms kind of know something about how to parent that they don't know. Mm. And then I think during the pandemic, there's a sense of being an imposter too, an imposter. Other people are so caring. Other people are doing something for the community or helping out in this time of need. And I'm not. So I'm kind of a fake almost. I like to think about myself as a caring person, but maybe I'm an imposter there. So it's so demoralizing. You know, it's almost like the minute we label ourselves as an imposter, it's almost as if the rug is pulled out. We don't have that firm foundation of feeling good about ourselves and feeling like we are capable and we do so much wonderful service in so many aspects of our life. Mm-hmm. So it's important to really get to know the imposter syndrome and work with it, because it can have such a negative power over us.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm so grateful that you shared specific examples, and in the various areas that makes complete sense. And the few things that really stood out to me was, you know, first and foremost, the rumination. So as you said, the more that we focus on the things that we are not able or capable to do, we spend that time ruminating on why we are a phony or why we can't do it or why other people are better at it than we are. And that really does keep us stuck. And beautifully said, so thank you. You know, that is absolutely, again, something that I personally experienced, rather than really celebrating like the here and now. And it took me some time personally to learn how to really look at myself and first start with things that I liked about myself, and then learned how to start loving things about myself. But this, yeah, absolutely is all part of the self-awareness, which I have shared even on my TikTok that, you know, self-awareness is step one to healing, to learning, and to growing. And this is exactly what this is. Which actually, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. Let me just give one other example. So I coach physicians, and I've had over the years, so many physicians tell me that they feel like an imposter. And with COVID, a couple of examples that come to mind, I was coaching a family physician who has, you know, a busy practice and helps a lot of people. And she's either doing visits, patient visits on Zoom, like we are right now, mm-hmm. or you know, under the PPE, the personal protective equipment, so the mask, the gown, the shield, the goggles. And she felt like such an imposter. I'm not a real doctor. I'm not on the front lines. I'm barely helping people. I'm not even hands-on with my patients. I can't kind of put a, you know, an arm around a shoulder or be close enough to do a physical exam, all the things that mean I'm a doctor and that I'm a caring doctor.
Yeah.
And she was really struggling with this sense of being an imposter. On the other hand, I was coaching a physician, an emergency physician in New York City at a time when COVID was really ravaging, you know, the population in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And here was a doctor on the front lines in the emergency room, and yet he felt like an imposter because he couldn't save people. A real doctor would be able to save lives. What is wrong with me?
Mm.
And we know that, you know, there isn't a cure for COVID. That's one of the problems. We don't have, you know, the right medicines, the right treatments to cure people. And yet this physician took it kind of to a personal level. There's something wrong with me that I can't cure people. And so that's the kind of the harm that the imposter syndrome causes, that you can see in these two physicians working so hard, so committed, you know, and experts in their fields, and yet demoralized with this sense that they were an imposter.
Right. My gosh. My heart goes out to them, you know, to be a doctor and to feel that. I can't imagine how much, and to all of our listeners who are nurses or who are doctors, first and foremost, thank you for what you do. You are absolutely not an imposter. You're an amazing angel gift from God. You know, but as we mentioned earlier in the conversation, that really when we are feeling those emotions in the moment, they feel so real, and it takes such a toll on our emotional and mental well-being, and it just spirals. And to think that even a doctor could question how fit or able they are is, you know, really just shows, to your point, like how important it is to learn about this imposter syndrome and to work on overcoming it. And one of the things that we started talking about, these examples and these feelings that our listeners can start identifying, like, yes, I've thought that way. Yes, I have felt that way. Is imposter syndrome something that you can self-diagnose or something that someone would need to see a doctor for?
Definitely, you can self-diagnose it. It's not, you know, a mental health condition. It's really just a mindset, almost a pattern of mind that we can find ourselves in. So no, you definitely don't need to go see some sort of expert to tell you that you suffer from it. You know, it's kind of a loose term. There's no, you know, real diagnostic criteria, and there's no reason to medicalize it like that. I don't think that would help anybody. That would probably just kind of fuel the problem even more. Like, I've got such a problem that I need to go see a doctor for it. So not at all. No, this is something that we, as you said, self-awareness is so critically important for growth and change and development. We have to get to know our mental patterns so that then we can work with more agility. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about that, how to work with it. But first, we have to be aware that it's there.
Absolutely. Yes. And so before we talk about the overcoming, one final question around how it affects us. Why is it so damaging to our self-esteem? What sorts of things? I know we talked a little bit about it, but if there are other things that you can share regarding self-esteem specifically and why it affects us.
Feeling like an imposter makes us feel so small, doesn't it? You know, it taps into so much self-doubt and so much insecurity that we can all have in our lives about ourselves. We don't necessarily get validation as children, as an adult. And so all of us can be prey to self-doubt and self-criticism, can't we? And what's so important for well-being and for resilience is to reverse that pattern, to build a good sense of self, self-acceptance, self-compassion, self-kindness. Because when we're kinder to ourselves, we can be kinder to others. There's no question about that. When we berate ourselves and tell ourselves that we're not good enough and everybody else is so much better, smarter, attractive, you know, fill in 500 blanks. We don't leave room to see the good in ourselves. And it's amazing how much that impacts our day-to-day interactions with others. Self-compassion is such a powerful medicine. Mm-hmm. And it's a medicine, not just for us, medicine for our whole society, frankly. You know, we're in such polarized times, as all of your listeners know, with the U.S. election coming up in particular, but for any time, you know, there's so much polarization in North American society. And some of that comes from this tendency to see the fault in other people and become very fixated on the faults, you know, someone who you disagree with on the political spectrum, for example. We can sort of harp on that disagreement. And what does that do? Well, that increases the polarization, the anger, the kind of the this, as opposed to this, as opposed to, well, how do we accept that there are differences and how do we work constructively so that we can build the community and build the kind of peace that we want for our world? So imposter syndrome is almost a microcosm, I think, of that same phenomenon that we're so harsh on ourselves, we're so judgmental, we're so kind of, there you go, screwing up again, kind of telling ourselves these negative messages. We're turning on ourselves, we're bullying ourselves in a way, and it does make us less able to be there for others. I've seen this in myself. I go down that imposter syndrome kind of rabbit hole. I'm so preoccupied with it in a sense, and I'm being so negative inside myself that I'm less present with my son. Mm-hmm. I'm less loving of him. If I really look at it closely, you know, I'm less able to have that kind of open and less critical stance toward him, you know, one of the most important people in my life. So it's not selfish to look at these things. It really isn't. It's vitally important for all of us to be the good citizen in our world that we all strive to be. I hope that makes sense. It's kind of a, like,
absolutely does. Yes.
It's kind of that expression, you know, think globally, act locally.
Oh, I've never heard that, but I love that.
And it really is true because all of our interactions add up. They add up. A lot of times we think they don't. We think, oh, if I'm in a bad mood, what's the big deal? Or if I, you know, get a robocall and I start getting, you know, pissed off at that person for interrupting my day, or a teller in the bank who, you know, has to report some difficult transaction and I get mean and nasty. Like, we all do that. Mm-hmm. And yet it adds up. Like, that makes somebody else's day much more difficult.
You're so right.
Yeah, so we have to be kinder to ourselves and work with things like these really erosive beliefs of being an imposter, because the cost of it is high.
Yeah,
it really is.
You're so right. And I've had goosebumps. A lot of what you've been sharing has been giving me goosebumps. And I would say that the two things that really resonated with me is, first and foremost, I love how you shared that self-compassion is the medicine. How comforting and empowering is that to hear those two words together? It's like you just took something that is a very important thing and gave this association with something that we as human beings associate medicine with, like healing, with, you know, as this remedy. And to see now very vividly self-compassion as a medicine, I just think that's so powerful. So I wanted to bring an awareness to that because it gave me goosebumps and I was like, wow, that's so beautiful and so profound. So thank you for sharing that. And then the other thing that just, you know, touched me personally and resonated with me personally is when you mentioned about the validation component and how that is, or the lack thereof, could be one of the root reasons why we experience the imposter syndrome. And you know, my listeners know, as I've spoken very openly about the kind of upbringing that I had living with, you know, a parent who is narcissistic and not feeling like I was getting the validation that I needed when I was a child. It wasn't until adulthood where I had that self-awareness moment and learned how to give myself the validation, which especially, as you said, going down that rabbit hole, the imposter syndrome rabbit hole, that is what medicine helps to pull me back out, is for me to say, what do I really need to give myself validation for right now? Am I looking to validate my sense of accomplishment at the office? Am I looking to give myself validation for coaching a client? Am I looking for, you know, because a lot of the times we will seek that validation from external sources. And what I have absolutely learned firsthand before I even started talking to this with clients about is that anytime that I found myself seeking for something, whether it was validation, love, connection, whatever, from an outside source or another person, I recognized as like a mirror work that I needed to give that to myself. And that imposter syndrome, like the validation, is definitely the key for me to get myself out of that. So I just wanted to share about that because, again, it really resonated with me. So I just wanted to share that.
It's so true. And it's so interesting that we learn to look for things outside of ourselves. And yet there's a lot of unpredictability outside of ourselves, isn't there? Like we expect, well, if he or she loves me, they would be more affectionate, or they would tell me that they loved me, or they would give me roses on Valentine's Day. You know, like we kind of waiting for this person to do something that then validates to us that they love us. And they've got their own lens and their own mindset and their own projections, and they're living their life. And maybe they don't remember Valentine's Day, or, you know, or they're just not an affectionate person. And we're kind of always looking somewhere, which is a very unreliable source. Mm-hmm. So doctors say this all the time. They often don't feel validated in their workplace. And whether you're a doctor or not, you can feel that in your workplace. And somehow, like, you should be getting these pats on the back to tell you that you're a good employee. And yet everybody's busy in workplaces. They've got their own issues and their own deadlines, and, you know, they want their own pats on the back. So I fully agree with what you're saying, Elizabeth, that part of resilience is being able to validate ourselves. And that is so true about the imposter syndrome. And it's true more globally than that. We have to take care of ourselves in that way. We're the only reliable and predictable source. We're the only one we can control, obviously. And yet, you know, so being able to validate ourselves is such an important life skill.
Absolutely. I love how you said that we are our only predictable source. That is also very profound and very empowering, because it's absolutely true. We cannot control other people's reactions, behaviors, feelings, how they treat us. We can't control that, but we can control how we treat ourselves, and we can control how we feel about ourselves. And we are the only predictability factor in that whole thing. And again, it's, you know, things like this where it's like, that's such a beautiful, like, aha moment. It's like, well, duh, but said in that way, it's like, that gives us, it grounds us with certainty, because we are the only predictability. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That's awesome.
It's the good news, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
There is a predictable source, as opposed to they don't love me, they don't show me, they don't respect me. Leaving that world and actually coming home to the predictable and reliable source of self-nurturance. So important.
Absolutely. And so this is a beautiful segue into the final question around imposter syndrome, which we've all been waiting for, is how can we overcome all of these things? And I know we started talking a little bit about it, but if there are things that you're also able to share that our listeners can start implementing even today, that would be awesome.
Well, you asked for three, so I'll try to deliver three. And the first is realizing that the imposter syndrome is simply a thought process. That's all it is. It's a thought process, kind of a mental trap, a mental thought loop. We start kind of feeding it and deciding, I'm an imposter, there's the evidence. But it's just a thought process. And so we can recognize that it's a thought process and realize that we have some choice about what we do with that thought process. So the first is just be aware. This is a thought process. And the second is this mindfulness awareness. This awareness, there goes my mind again into this. And you know what? I have a choice. I have a choice. If I keep telling myself I'm an imposter, that's one option. Another option is to look for evidence that I'm not an imposter. Mm-hmm. In other words, as a parent, to look for evidence of how good you're doing as a parent, how loving you are, how you do put your child's needs first, as opposed to, I'm an imposter, I'm not doing good enough. So the first is realizing it's a thought process. The second is mindfully having more autonomy over where we put our attention. Mm-hmm. And then the third, we've touched on a little bit, it's self-kindness. Realizing that everybody at times feels like an imposter. Really, it's very pervasive, as I gave you those examples for physicians, highly respected members of our society, and yet many of them walk around feeling like an imposter. So you may have covered this in some of your other sessions, but something that's called the self-compassion break. So with mindfulness, tuning into the thought process, realizing there goes my mind again. Mm. And then literally putting your hand over your heart and saying some words to yourself. May I be kind to myself. Mm. May I realize that feeling like an imposter is just not good. And may I be compassionate to myself. And may I accept that I'm an imperfect being amongst imperfect beings, and that's okay. And may I remind myself of all the good that I am doing. So those are the three that make sense to me: thought process, mindfulness, and taking the time to nurture and build that muscle of compassion toward ourselves.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I haven't spoken about that specifically, but I'm so glad that you brought it up, because there is so much comfort. And it's almost like by you putting your hand on your heart and telling yourself those things, you're pulling a blanket over yourself, or you're, you know, putting a cushion behind your back so that you feel supported. Like, it, that's like the visual that just came to mind, even just hearing your voice, which is so beautiful and soothing. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, I just want to shower myself with so much love right now. And this is like this beautiful transfer of energy. So yes, I would love to invite all of our listeners today to just, you know, even if it means rewinding this soul chat and just listening to Dr. Gazelle share that again, like, please gift yourself with that time, even if it's 30 seconds, a minute, you know, whatever it is, just to really soak that in and try it. And even if it's something that isn't quite giving you that sense of, you know, compassion yet, because sometimes we're so far down the rabbit hole that it does take the time. I love how you said that really strengthens the fact that we are imperfect beings among other imperfect beings. Because one of the key things that I really love to share on Found Family Podcast is this truth that you are not alone, that we are all on this journey together, that we are all walking on this path together. And even in the moments where we feel so hurt that we're the only ones feeling hurt, or we're feeling so down and self-doubtful and so depressed and we must be the only ones feeling this way, that we're not. You know, we are absolutely all experiencing life on the same planet. We share the same air and we share the same, you know, if not the same exact experiences, but we experience the same kind of like human emotions, and we all go through these things. And to just know with certainty that you're not alone in what you're feeling is also so comforting and helps you to really take these moments of self-compassion and really believe it more, because you recognize like the magnitude. And as you said, like, globally helps you to work on things locally. Like, you really get this full 360 perspective that we really are all in this together.
And sometimes when we do that self-compassion break, the hand over the heart, it can feel artificial, contrived. Oh, I'm not even worth that compassion. And I know that. I've experienced that myself, and I've seen that in so many of the individuals that I've coached. And yet, that exercise helps us to build compassion for ourselves. It helps us to see that we are part of the common and shared humanity that you're talking about, Elizabeth, that we all suffer. We all have challenges. Mm. We all have difficulties, some small, some large, but it is so easy to start thinking it's just me.
Yeah.
And it is never just us. It is never just us. And that voice that accuses us of being an imposter that can almost feel like our own voice, I want your listeners to know that it is not their own voice. It's an internalized voice, an internalized voice from parents, coaches, siblings, mentors, things that we learned in vulnerable times in our lives. And because we believed in these, you know, sort of authority figures, we believed their messages and we were good kids. We learned, we internalized these messages and these kind of shaming, blaming points of view. And over time, it almost feels like it's us saying these nasty things to ourselves, which almost makes us feel even more like it must be true. But it isn't true. It isn't true. There's so much goodness in each and every one of us. And we have to remember that and build the muscle through that exercise of hand over heart, building the muscle of what would I say to a good friend? What would I say to a beautiful young child who was struggling with something similar? And let me just try to say that to myself, even if I don't believe it. Let me push myself and try and do this as a regular practice, because over time, we can quiet those negative self-messages. We can right-size them. We can sort of push them away where they need to be and build the ability to see our own goodness more clearly. It's so critically important.
It is. And it's so magical when we're able to really do that and help see the beautiful benefits. Like when we get to a point where we do exercise that muscle and we are starting to feel, even if it's a little bit at a time, this sense of self-acceptance and self-validation and self-love. I mean, it's just magical. And I'm getting goosebumps again. Like I get this body reaction, like when we talk about things, because it really, it is the most magical experience. And it's something that, you know, I've been on my self-love journey now for almost 5 years. And that is, you know, for me to have created Found Family Podcast, in addition to helping spread the message that we are not alone, I am so passionate about spreading this message that I have found family with my guests, with my listeners. And it's just so beautiful that we also have the control and the empowering decisions to choose the people that we want to surround ourselves with. And I know that you and I were talking a little bit offline about your found family. So I would love to invite you, if you're open to sharing a little bit about your experience with found family and how this is also something that resonates with you.
Yes, but maybe before we get to found family, I'll just share that I, like I'm sure many of your listeners, unfortunately grew up in a fairly abusive household. And the household looked fine on the outside. There was no alcohol, no drugs. My parents, you know, were middle class. My father was a social worker. My mother was a teacher. But what went on inside the house was so different than that facade. And it left me feeling so much shame and really like there was something very wrong with me. Like many abuse survivors, that shame was transferred from the abusers to me, and I took it on as a vulnerable, innocent child. And the reason that I'm going into this is I've been on a healing journey for quite some time, a very successful healing journey. The most powerful part of that healing journey has been self-compassion. So therapy, acupuncture, Reiki, you know, craniosacral. I mean, I feel like I tried so many modalities and I was fortunate that I had the resources to afford to do that. Many of them were incredibly helpful, to, you know, don't get me wrong. And having a trusted therapist was a foundation and it still is a foundation. And turning the self shame, the self guilt, the sense of blame, the self hatred, frankly, into self-compassion has been the most powerful part of my healing. There's just no question in my mind. And I, as a coach, and I know you do this as well, really try to help my clients develop that muscle of self-compassion. It's a muscle. It can be a really atrophied muscle for many of us, given the wounds that we have in our lives. And yet, just like going to the gym and building up your biceps, we can build this muscle of self-kindness and self-compassion. And as we're talking about, it's so critically important. In terms of found family, my son is now a young man. He's 23, and he has so much family, but almost none of it is biologic. Okay, so he has uncles from an aunts and uncles program, and they are the most wonderful uncles. They went on and adopted two kids who are my son's cousins. Not biologic, but those are his cousins. My mother died when my son was just a year old, and her best friends became my son's grandparents. They didn't have grandparents of their own, and they were delighted to have a grandchild. It didn't matter that he wasn't their biologic son. So they were his grandparents for most of his life. You know, they came into his life when he was a year old. Mm-hmm. And my son has so much family. I roomed with somebody when I was in college. I've spent Thanksgivings with her family for 40 years. Wow. So that's, my son is part of that family as well. So there's no shortage of love. There's no shortage of family. And I think he's done pretty well in this deal. You know, if somehow we tried to have those connections with my biologic family, I don't think it would have gone very well, because I needed to separate from my biologic family, and it just wasn't healthy. It wouldn't have been healthy for him. It would have been stilted, you know, wouldn't have been the kind of love and acceptance and support and goodness that he has surrounding him. So family is a broad term.
Yeah.
It really is. It's really worth expanding and having a chosen family, because why not? Absolutely. You know, none of us should be limited by biology in any way.
Right. No shortage. I love how you phrased it in that way, because it really just shows this limitless potential of making connections. And I will say with absolute certainty that having grown up in a family, again, where, to your point, it was not outwardly abusive, it's so challenging to even convey what emotional and mental abuse looks like, because it's something that isn't outwardly shown. And it's not like you have a bruise to show or a scar to remember. It's all in here, but then it leaks into other areas of life. And again, sometimes those things are not obvious. So yes, absolutely. Like, my heart goes out to every single person who experienced any type of abuse, you know, as a child, as you shared, like, while we are in our most vulnerable states, shame, guilt, and fear were three pillars that were downloaded, programmed into me. They became the foundation of everything that I thought to be true about life, about myself. I will say that I've also been pretty open on my podcast as well about how I grew up in a very religious household. And this is by no means to, you know, say, like, everyone has their own views and I respect all of them. For me personally, it was that contributed to the trauma, because it was needing to be this perfect figure for God, and otherwise the devil was going to come after you and possess you. So it was like the fear, the shame, and the guilt all piled on, where I started realizing for myself that if I keep these kinds of connections too close, it's going to infiltrate me for too long, and I can't do it. So I said, I need to find out, again, as you said, like, the awareness component is number one. Like, I need to find out what kind of energy I want around me, what kind of support I need around me. And while I didn't know about these support systems that your son has been so blessed and privileged to have, I went out searching for my own. You know, I feel like at work, I had like a work mom, a work dad, you know, siblings that now I have friends all over the world. And it's just been, and I have social media to thank as well, for as, you know, evil as it can be sometimes, you know, there's a side of each coin that if you really focus to look on one side, it's going to affect you in that, on that face that you're staring at. But if you flip it, it it becomes a different experience. And I decided to use social media as a way to find connections, to find my found family. So I celebrate our journeys, and I really do feel so grateful and so blessed that, you know, Anchor exists for me to have created this, because now my found family, I mean, it extends to, you know, there's people in Ireland, there's people in the UK, like it's magical.
Wonderful. Really wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much. You are so wonderful, and I'm so grateful for you. And we have about like 5 more minutes. I know that we were talking about your book at the very beginning, Everyday Resilience, A Practical Guide to Build Inner Strength and Weather Life's Challenges, which came out in August. So congratulations again. Are there any closing thoughts or things that you'd like to share about the book and where we can find it so that we can support you?
Oh, thank you, Elizabeth.
Of course.
Yeah, in the book, it's very practical. And I share my belief that resilience is not just the stuff of heroes and heroines and super men and women and, you know, elite athletes. It's actually something that we all have within us. In fact, it is a deep well of resources, of strengths, of wisdom, of goodness, of knowledge that resides within each and every one of us. And we don't always learn that it's there. And we don't learn how to replenish it. And I think for many of us, it's actually somewhat paved over by complexities in our families or relationships that we have as adults and messaging that we take on in ways that we've explored. And yet there are practical strategies that we can do to access our own well of resourcefulness. And they're not that hard to do. I include a lot of those practical strategies. I also include a little bit about my own resilience journey and the resilience journeys of the many people that I've really been very fortunate to work with as a healer over my career. So it's an easy read. You can get it on Amazon. You can also download a free chapter on my website, www.gailgazelle.com. And I encourage anybody to, you know, download the free chapter if it can be helpful to you. It's about weathering difficulties. And if 2020 is showing us anything, it's the fact that difficulty is part of life, and unpredictability and uncertainty are part of our life trajectories. It's just the way it is. Mm. And that they affect all of us. So we all need to access that well of resilience and build it up and replenish it and nurture it so that we have what we need to meet these kind of challenges, so that we can be at our best and not just get through things, but actually grow and develop and thrive as a result of the challenges that we face. So I hope the book can be helpful to your listeners.
Oh, absolutely. And I can't wait to read your book, and I would love to invite you again if you want to do like a book club. I've been really interested in going that route with the podcast, is having like a segment around books that I read and inviting the authors and having like a book club. I had one so far with Shannon Kaiser about her book Adventures for Your Soul, that, you know, back when I was going through my deepest, darkest depression about 5 years ago, which really catapulted me to where I am today. So I'm grateful for all the experiences, as hard and as challenging as they were. It was through resilience, through self-compassion, through self-love that I was able to really build myself back up and work out these muscles. And, you know, that again meant so much to me. So I just loved that experience so much. And I'm an avid reader. As you can see, my cat came out while we were talking, but that's like a third, you know, a fraction of the books that I have. So I'm an avid reader and would be honored. That is absolutely wonderful. And resilience is something that really resonates with me as well, because to me, that is what I needed to find within me. So this well that you're talking about, it's like going down there and pulling out the things that you need to help support yourself to move forward, and just learning how to do that. I actually heard someone from, I do Beachbody workouts from home, and one of the coaches, I believe it was Autumn Calabrese, that said, the workouts don't get any easier, you get stronger. And so now what I help share even with clients is like, life doesn't get any easier, you get stronger. And that's, again, tying everything of what you said is there is this muscle that we can work, and being able to offer resources like the first chapter of your book and this podcast that are free for everyone, it's like I celebrate everyone stepping into that resilience by saying, I'm worth it. I'm going to shower myself with love because I deserve it. And this is step one. So yes.
I fully agree.
Amazing. So as you mentioned, your website is www.gailgazelle.com. To my found family, please know, as always, the links are going to be in the description. If you're listening to this on audio, going to be in the description of the episode. If you're watching this on YouTube, it's down below in the description. Gail, are there other places that we can find you, social media, et cetera, that we can go and love and support you?
Thank you. Yes, I'm on Twitter, Gail Gazelle, MD. And then my Facebook page, which is also Gail Gazelle, MD. I do Facebook Lives every Wednesday at 5 p.m. So I did one this week, for example, on guilt and how to manage all of the guilt that so many of us are experiencing during the pandemic. So every week I try to delve into a topic. So please join me there. I would love that.
Oh, absolutely. And I look forward. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. And also, found family, Gail's book is going to be in the description as well. So want to encourage you all to go and check it out. And don't forget to download the first chapter. Thank you so much. I so appreciate you so much being here. Really, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and tune in next week for a new topic. To help spread the good vibes, please share this episode with friends and family, or if you share on social, be sure to tag me at Coach Lizzie.